Welcome to the podcast series The New Student Pharmacist, where we discuss chemistry and pharmacy, as well as leaders in pharmacy careers, community, and chemistry and pharmacy research. We encourage you to support the work we are doing and follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by subscribing for free. Note, the views on the podcast represent those of my guest and I.
Purpose of these episodes not at all for advice or medical suggestions. These are aimed to provide support to peer pharmacists in training in educational and intellectually stimulating ways. Again, these are not at all for medical advice or medical suggestions. Please see your local board and state certified health professional. The views of this podcast represent those of my guests and I.
Okay, welcome to the New Student Pharmacist Podcast Experience. It's so good to have you listening in today. My guest today is Mr. Paul Neal, owner of Vantage Point Commercial Capital. He's also the host of the Brick and Mortar Show, Brick and Mortar Money Show Podcast. He's definitely accomplished in this field. Paul Neal is the owner of Vantage Point Commercial Capital and a trailblazer in empowering business owners to create wealth, autonomy, and control by owning their own commercial space. Not just an expert in commercial real estate, Paul is a master at making complex topics accessible and engaging. That's very powerful. His new book, Unleash Your Business, Unlock Wealth, Autonomy, and Control by Buying Your Building and Firing Your Landlord, delves into this transformative approach to commercial property ownership. Wow. The podcast guest, he brings a lot to the table. So I'm happy to have him. Welcome, Mr. Paul Neal.
Yeah. Hey, David, I'm excited to be here today. Excited to talk to young budding professionals and entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So my question to you is, can you give us a quick snapshot of your career trajectory and your life story? What can you give us before we delve deep into like the transitions and the steps you took? What story could you share with us about your career that has really influenced and impacted you to the point where you have made these strides?
Yeah, sure. So I think it all began even sort of pre-career when I was young. I, for whatever reason, always had this desire to want to be free and do a lot of things and not be limited by what other people said I could do or have or whatnot. And so that was always kind of my underlying motivation, still is today. And so I thought my career path was to study engineering and work in the field of engineering. That's what I studied in college. My father was an engineer. Honestly, I didn't know a lot about it and what they did. I just was pretty good at math and science. And I thought, well, maybe I can use this to, you know, invent something or whatnot and, you know, and pursue my dreams and visions. And so went down that road and started working out in the field. And you want a story. So sort of a pivotal moment for me was as a newly sort of minted, in fact, actually this was before I even finished school, I was in the co-op program, and one of the companies that I worked for, sort of like our co-op program was like an internship, And so, but you would work a quarter, and then we were on the quarter system back then. So you'd work a quarter, and then you're in school for two quarters, and then you're back at the company. So I was sitting in a conference room that had about eight people in it, and we were in there, and we were designing these network test boxes. And this is sort of when, at the beginning of the internet, when it started to become a big thing. And we these were custom designed for large companies. So each box was like $80,000, and you would make some different changes and whatnot on it. Well, the thing was, David, we sat around the room, and I was mostly sort of a bystander because I was, again, co-oping. They argued for 2 to 3 hours, it seemed like an eternity, about the color of the little yellow or the little rubber booties that went on this $80,000 box. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I was like, is this going to be what I'm going to do, you know, as an engineer? And so it really kind of made a deep impression on me at that point that I needed to do something on my own and go out into business. And actually was the catalyst for me to do that and start looking at, you know, how can I go into business for myself and own my own future. And that was kind of the one catalytic story.
Wow, that's good. That's good. I can relate in some ways. I started off doing engineering for the first 2.5 years of my career, and then I transitioned off to biochemistry, and it's been an interesting journey, a good and interesting ever since. Now I'm in pharmacy school. So, yeah, that's a very interesting point that you made. So, as an entrepreneur yourself, how do you manage or how do you approach risk management when it comes to investing in commercial properties or investing in general? What's your framework? How do you, so obviously you've made some strategies, you've had some success, you've had a great degree of success. So how do you manage risk, even when it comes to like taking on new opportunities, on new investment opportunities, on new business opportunities, on new clients? How are you like framing risk in your approach?
Yeah. So I always sort of try to begin with the end in mind and say, okay, what, you know, what is the outcome? What is the best possible outcome that can come from this scenario?
Okay.
And then on one side, and then what's the worst possible outcome, you know, that can happen? And you know, what's sort of the likely outcome? And I try to sort of run these scenarios, particularly like in finance, we can look a lot at numbers, and numbers will tell the story a lot. And all investments are really, you know, they should be numbers driven, right? They shouldn't really be emotionally driven. Emotions will lie to you, right? And they do frequently. And unfortunately, too many of us listen to our emotions. In fact, I think it was Warren Buffett that said, and he may not have been the original mentor of this, but he said, be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy when it comes to investments. And so, you know, when everybody's on the bandwagon, that's the time to get off the bandwagon. And when nobody's on the bandwagon, that's the time to be looking to get in, right? So it's counterintuitive to what we feel, and which is hard because you're like, man, this just feels like the wrong thing to do. So then you have to then default to, okay, you know, again, the logic, the numbers, you know, what are we investing in? You know, we focus mostly in real estate, and real estate is, there's an art to it, but there's a whole lot of science to it. You know, like a lot of people will invest in real estate and based on speculation, right? Like I'm going to buy this property and I think it's in a good area, and I'm sure in 5 years it's going to be worth a lot more money. Well, that's a very sort of warm and fuzzy feel good way to approach it. And it may work and it may not work. It's a little like going to Las Vegas, right? I mean, you don't know. I mean, I can put my money on you know, red 23 and, you know, black 15 and hope the little ball lands there, right? Because I got a feeling. But more importantly, it's to understand what drives that investment, what drives the real estate. So, you know, what if I'm buying a building or buying an investment property, for instance. You know, I have a lot of young entrepreneurs and young professionals that once they start their careers are making some money and they want to start investing, and a lot of them want to start in real estate. And so a lot of them will start with a single family investment and whatnot. And And my recommendation and what I help them do is to understand, let's look at the cash flow of this property. Let's look, you're going to invest a certain amount of money as a down payment. And that money could be invested somewhere else, right? You have all these options on where you could put your down payment money. And so there's an opportunity cost when you invest it in one thing and not the other. But then let's look at what are the rents you're going to bring in? How are the rents going to increase? And you can make some educated guesses on that based upon the market. And there are some things you can do to improve a property to also increase the rents. We can figure out very simply, what's the debt service going to be on that? What is the mortgage payment? We know what the taxes and the insurance are going to be. And so we can then run some models and say, okay, well, if rents go up by X percent, then here's going to be your return. If they go up by, less than that, here's your return. If the property never appreciates a dollar, here's your return. But what if it does appreciate 3% a year or whatever? What's the return there? So then, and then you compare that to the other options that are out there. So it's a matter of really understanding, where you're putting your money is probably, and how that works and what are the possible outcomes. And then you're not eliminating risk, but at least you're mitigating risk. You're understanding, intelligently going in. And even so, you don't always win, but you win many more times than you lose when you go into it with that kind of an attitude.
That perspective.
Yeah. Because again, emotion, and I'm an emotional guy too, and I've made my share of mistakes. And that's, it's always hard though to go left when everyone's going right, and vice versa. But that's where the money's made, And most wealth is made in down economies, not surging economies, because there's things are on sale. You have opportunities to buy things. And so many people that I know went in 2008 when real estate crashed, and they were buying properties literally for pennies on the dollar. And now those properties are worth a ton of money, and they did really, really well. But that's because they bought them when nobody wanted to buy them, when the market had fallen out. So
yeah. So I sound like I need to have you as a recurring guest, hopefully, on this podcast to talk more about money management and financial skills. This is good. So you talk about a range of possible outcomes. So and you use models, you said, to outline what are the possible outcomes. I was listening. I always admire financial people who are really knowledgeable in financial affairs or financial matters. I occasionally listen to Jamie Dimon. And he talks about how when he's writing his yearly report, the yearly letter to his stakeholders or shareholders, he looks at a range of possible outcomes. Because, in essence, you can't really predict the future, but you can look at a range of possible outcomes and make educated decisions based on that. That's very good. And you also bring up a second point, which you can mitigate risk. You can't really eliminate it, but you can mitigate it. So how often do you stress test these situations? Think about if everything was to go wrong, what would be the end result? Do you stress test these financial models, or do you just look at if this goes wrong or this goes wrong?
Yeah. I mean, so, most entrepreneurs are, very, they walk around with rose colored glasses, right? And I tend to do that too. So, and that can be your friend. It motivates you to do things, but also can be your biggest enemy, right? Instead of focusing on sort of worst case scenarios, what we try to do is build margin into the numbers. So for instance, I've talked to my daughter about this all the time. It's if we only need to drive across town, it's 10 minutes to get there for an appointment, but we're only allotting 10 minutes, then inevitably something's going to come up and we're going to be late. Something's going to happen, right? You've got to have some margin in case the unexpected happens, because it always does. Things never go as well as you expect. They never are as easy as you expect. And I laugh a lot at the on HGTV, the flipping home shows. And I think every show on that channel is now a flip show in a different city and a different personality or whatever. But they make it look so easy. And at the end of the day, I always laugh, because when I talk to people that are really doing it, there's a lot of surprises along the way that you don't really know about, right? So that you open up this wall and turns out you've got an infestation of termites or whatever, you got to rewire the house or whatever. So margin's important. And the way we sort of mitigate it is you don't throw everything you got into a deal. You have to have some reserves on the sideline. So like financially, you want to have some liquidity. I call it dry powder. You want to have some cash on hand as reserves, just in case things don't go well. You can generally weather your storm and get out of whatever situation you're in and be okay. When we do financial calculations, like on buying a commercial property, we look at what's called debt service coverage, and there's a margin in there. So basically, generally, the industry wants to see a 25% greater revenue, net revenue, than your debt service. So there's this 25% would be your profit margin, but it's also a safety margin, right? Mm-hmm. So in the event that something goes south, there's still some extra reserves to fall back on, and that's built in up front. And so that's going to limit, like you see right now, a lot of banks are cutting back on the amount of money or the percentage of money that they're going to loan on a particular piece of property, which means the borrowers are having to come to the table with more down payment money or more liquidity into the deal, because the banks are like, we want a little more margin in case the property market doesn't go the way everyone wants it or hopes it to go. We're protected. And so as an investor, you have to kind of think the same way. You're like, okay, I know, ideally what I want, but worst case scenario, this could happen. Most likely neither are going to work. It's going to be somewhere in the middle. And so let me just kind of plan on that and emotionally plan on that, that if I expect this one deal is going to be my ticket to ride, right? Mm-hmm. It probably won't be. It probably won't be, but if you do enough of those deals, eventually, you know, it works out generally in your favor.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, given that, so that's good. That's good. So given that you have experience and you've made some strides in the wealth management and wealth building space, what issues or problem or pain point areas can you identify within like the trajectory of like students, grad students, like budding professionals that you think your expertise really can contribute? Let me phrase it differently. So what advice do you have for people who are in that phase when it comes to wealth building? Because I'm not sure if I'm correct with this statement, but many times those are diametrically, or there's a dichotomy that's presented. Either you're in school or you're out of school and building wealth. Mm-hmm. So do you think they ever coincide in terms of building wealth in the school space or building wealth as you are in school? Is that even a possibility? Or is that just like a fanciful dream?
So I'm gonna maybe redefine the term or define the term wealth. Wealth, your personal wealth is not just your bank statement and what you have in your personal financial statement. Okay. So the biggest advice, which answers this question, I think, in my mind, based on my experience and what I've seen, is that if you're a student and you're in school today and you're learning a trade or a profession or some specialty, you're learning something that you're going to be able to apply, and then this skill you'll be able to then go take what you've learned, your knowledge, and take it to the marketplace and basically trade that knowledge for income and a lifestyle, right? I mean, that's why most people do it. But here's the thing, what you have to realize if you're a student is that a lot of people, when they finish school, that's literally the last bit of learning that they ever do. And unfortunately, what you learn in school can be very effective in a trade, or like, obviously you have to go to pharmacy school if you're going to be a pharmacist, so you have to do that. And I know pharmacists can do well financial, and it's a great career and all that. I know some, I have some friends that are. But what they don't teach you, and what I think you're doing here, which is awesome, is the bigger picture. And that is, hey, that's just one part of your overall life, right? And you want to take the opportunity to be a lifelong student on personal wealth, developing yourself in all areas, in your intellectual, in your physical, in your spiritual, in your emotional. Part of that is, you know, investing and learning about other things outside of your trade. in your trade, you could do that for the rest of your life if that's what you want to do, and more power to you. But a lot of people may work in a field for a number of years and say, well, hey, now I want to leverage this and do something else. And if you've been smart with your decisions by continuing to educate yourself and get around people that have done things that you want to do, maybe inside and outside your field, mm-hmm. then you grow. And as you be, then you will be able to do, and then you'll be able to have more. So the more you be, the more you can do, and the more you can have. A lot of people want to skip the be and the do and just get right to the have. And so what they do is, David, they go out and they get in debt and they come out. So you've been a student, you know, a starving student, let's say, for all these years. And now you're finally making a decent salary, right? You know, like, people are going to pay you money. And
oh, man. And
so what do? You go out and you buy a nice car and you do all this and you get the credit cards out. And that's the worst thing you can do. If you're going to do anything, my suggestion is put some money away. Even if you don't have a lot now, put it in your head, you know, be thinking about it, planning on it, talking about it. And then when you do get the salary, your first investment ought to be into a house or somewhere you can live and buy, because now you're going to get on the equity train and start creating wealth in real estate. And that will open up amazing opportunities down the road for additional investments, whether it's in real estate or other things, because now your net worth is growing, whether you're doing anything or not, because you've got to live somewhere. So you're going to rent something, you're going to pay somebody rent, and their rent's going to go up every single year, and you've got no control, and you got no equity, and you got no tax advantages. Or you can buy a place, and when you're buying a property to live in, the mortgage terms are great. The down payment terms are low. You don't have to have a lot of that. And particularly if you're a professional, there are programs. I mean, you can get in for almost no money down. And so now you've got this property that's going to grow. It will grow in value over time, and you will pay down the loan over time. But a lot of people go out and they buy the car, and then it puts them in a position where they can't afford to go buy the house. And then so now they're already behind the curve, and you may have student loans and things like that. So you've already got some debt maybe you've got to deal with. But don't go out and get a bunch of other debt. Educate yourself and build the wealth of value in yourself. Wow. And you'd be amazed what could happen in 5 or 10 years after the fact.
Wow, good. You know, be, do, then have. So identity, action, and then acquisition. That's very good. It's very good. So, you know, and I was learning about time management, because my parents made sure that I learned about time management from an early point in my career. And that's contributed to me being able to do the things that I've done so far, so early in my career. So when I was learning about time management, I learned about I learned the concepts of delegation and leverage. So delegating tasks to different people and leveraging people within your network to help you be more productive, basically. So I'm curious, how do those concepts interplay when it comes to money management? Because people say time is money, but I take it those concepts could be like, how do you use delegation when it comes to money management? How do you use leverage when it comes to money, or acquiring money, or being more productive to gain money? Where do you see those playing out, even in your career or your experiences? How have you used it?
Well, I would disagree on the popular saying that time is money.
Okay.
Money is money. Time is life.
Okay.
Right. So you're trading your life for money, and it's interesting. There's a verse in the Bible that says redeeming the time, and so this idea of redeeming your time, you can buy back your life or your time with money, and you know, you can get from here where I am in Virginia to Colorado, a lot of different ways. You can walk, you can ride a bike, you can drive, you can fly. And they all get you there. Mm-hmm. But they all get you there in different methodologies, but at different speeds and whatnot. So you could sort of, the analogy would be leverage. And so as an individual, we have a limited amount of time in our life, right? And so you got 24 hours in a day. I don't care how smart you are or how gifted you are. or not, right? Same time, just like you learn time management. And by the way, your parents obviously were very, very wise people to really set you on that path, which is an advantage. So you learn leverage. And so there's a lot of ways to leverage. Like for instance, simple one, like I don't cut my grass. I haven't cut my grass for decades. It's not because I don't like the smell of freshly mown lawns. It's not because I wouldn't mind getting out and getting a break and just like, oh, this is great. I feel like I accomplished something. You know, it's cut the grass, looks great. But it's that hour or two that I could use to do something more effective with my time that's a higher value than something that, you know, just pushing a lawnmower, which anybody can do, right? It's getting an assistant, you know, like in a business. So if you're a pharmacist, having an assistant that can do a lot of the things that the tasks that don't really require the level of education and decisioning that that a pharmacist has to do, but stuff that still has to get done, right? So you can train someone to do that and leverage your time and therefore maybe double your time. We have it in real estate too. That's why a lot of people like real estate investment, because for a small down payment, then you can leverage an asset that's much more valuable and take advantage of appreciation. Yeah. So for instance, if you were to buy, let's say you bought a $400,000 house.
Yeah. Choose examples. Down, very good.
Yeah. And you put down, let's say it's, you're buying it for yourself. Let's say you put down 5%. So 20,000, or maybe even no money, but let's just say 5%, $20,000. So you put down $20,000, right, on this $400,000 house. But if you look at the average appreciation ratio based upon area that you live in the house and everything, but let's just say 3 to 4%, we'll say 4% to make the math work or to make it easy. So a 4% appreciation on a $400,000 house is a $16,000 increase in the value of the property every year, compound. Okay. So you invested 20 in the end of the year, you made 16. So you made $16,000 on a $20,000 investment. Well, multiply that over 10 years, and now this property might be worth, you know, $550,000, or I don't do the math in my head, but significantly more. You still only invested $20,000. So you leveraged a little bit, and you're able to leverage it versus putting $20,000 into the bank and getting a passbook savings rate, or even putting it into a stock, right? And let's say you can get yourself a 10% return, you know, which is not easy. You're still only going to get $2,000 a year return on that $20,000 investment because it's not leveraged. Wow. So a lot of people like real estate from that standpoint. And then taking it to another level, if you buy an investment property, like a lot of young professionals will hack this, where they'll buy their first house knowing it's not their dream house, and they get in it for very little down. And then a year or two later, they'll rent that house out and they'll go buy another house to live in. So they move to this other house, they've rented the first one. And then another year or two later, they do the same thing and they're continually sort of upgrading their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you've got this trail of 1, 2, 3, 4, however many houses that are being rented that are bringing in positive cash flow because the renters are paying the mortgage. And oh, by the way, they're probably appreciating also in the 3 to 4 to 5% range every year. So now you might have $1 million worth of assets that are appreciating, but you got in it for very little money and somebody else is paying for it. So that's an example of leverage, you know, from a financial world. You can do it with options and things like that in the market too. And I'm not an expert there, so I'm not going to go there. But I know real estate. So. But anytime you can duplicate yourself or your efforts or energies through someone else or through some other technology, it's the way to go, because again, we only have 24 hours in a day, and there will come a time where most of your listeners will have families. If they don't have them now, they will want to spend time with their family and not working, you know, 80, 100 hours a week, right? So you want to But you want the lifestyle, and you want everything and you want to go on vacation. And so you want, you know, your business or your income to continue to go. So that's kind of the idea of leverage, and you can do it with people, you can do it with assets, and you can do it, like, you know, I'll give you another example. So like the book, like you mentioned the book I wrote. So the book is leverage. So the book, people can go out and get the book that are interested in maybe buying the commercial space that they're running. Let's say you have a pharmacy. You're a pharmacist. You come out of school and you're working for a company and you've done great there for 2-3 years. And you're like, hey, I'm going to start my own pharmacy here in town. And you go out and do that and you're going to lease space for a few years, which is the right thing to do because you got to get your business going and profitable. But once you're going and profitable and you've had it going for a few years, you're like, okay, wow, now I'm spending all this money on rent. What if I own the building that my pharmacy was in? Because I've got to pay rent to somebody and it's not that much different than owning your own home. And so I got this book out there that we haven't met, but you happen to find it on Amazon or whatever. And you read the book, you're like, oh, I didn't realize I could do this. And so you reach out to me or someone else who wrote a book or something. And so there's leverage of like, oh, it's working for me and I'm not there doing it.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, definitely get the book, folks. Get the book. Purchase the book. So yeah, as we start to wrap up, you host your own podcast. What led you to start your podcast? And the podcast is the Brick and Mortar Money Show Podcast. So what made you start your podcast?
Yeah, Brick and Mortar Money Show Podcast. No, that's a great question, David. I love this. I love talking to people and engaging to people and learning and just highlighting people that are doing amazing things. Cause again, I learn and people learn. And I think the more we can learn from each other, the better off we all are. Most of my clients and friends and the people I work with, kind of my tribe, are business owners and entrepreneurs and professionals, high performing professionals. And so our show is really geared around sort of the confluence of business ownership and creating wealth through property ownership. Because as you'll find, again, as your careers continue to grow and you guys start making a lot of money, you're going to want to do something with it that's productive. And so a lot of people, you know, everyone's putting money in 401ks and all that. And that has its pluses and minuses for sure. But then a lot of people want real estate because they can taste it, touch it, feel it, see it. And in a lot of areas, from commercial to a lot of vacation homes, things like that, people doing all kinds of things. And so I felt like, well, this is a great place to sort of to learn myself and interview people in different areas of that space that could help inform all of us business owners on, you know, what's working, what's not working, and just really how to be better. And back to one of the points I made earlier is to continue to grow, kind of like the reason you're probably doing your podcast, right? To grow and get smarter and more intelligent and meet new people. And someone told me a long time ago, and actually encouraged me to do it. And their line was, exposure brings opportunity, right? We're exposing ourselves to new things, right? I mean, why did you start yours? You've got a successful podcast.
Thank you. Yeah. So as we start to wrap up, the reason why I started this because several reasons. You know, I started this during the pandemic in 2020. So the country was locked. I was in the Bahamas at the time with my family. Country was locked down. And I also was reading a book by MIT Press called Find Your Path. And I was like, wow. And the book was discussing like key people in science who won like the Hertz Fellowship, which is like a big fellowship in science, NSF Fellowship. Well, these like huge fellowships, and they're like presidents of this company and this type of thing. And I was like, wow. I was like, imagine if I could become a student of these types of people and not just make the classroom for myself, but expand the classroom so that it becomes a public forum.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that I'm helping people as I help myself, you know?
Yeah.
It's a mutual beneficial opportunity, benefiting from the people and learning about them, their trajectories, their life stories, how they make decisions, how they strategize, like, and then take that information and make it publicly available. Because I'm all about equity and access with strategy, not just saying I want to make things equal or make opportunities, create opportunities to help people, but be strategic with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's where this podcast came about. Like, for example, I'm going to say this last thing and then we'll conclude. For example, people talk about getting into different academic institutions, right? But one strategy that people are not always aware of or not always trying to execute in their own career is many times those people do a research internship or some type of practical experience at the other university, get a letter of rec at that university for admission into a higher level program at the university that the internship at. So like do research at University X, even though you go to University B, then you apply University X to get into that university, and you have the letter of rec to support your application because of the experiences you've done. So that in itself is a strategy to progress in academia for different programs like grad school, med school, pharmacy school, all those others. So yeah, I completely agree. You know, Mr. Neil, I appreciate you sharing all these insights, you know, talking about financial management, wealth building, like real estate. So any final words before we conclude?
I would just say that this has been a lot of fun, David. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show. And, you know, if you're speaking to, I'm sure the brightest of them out there, people that are pursuing higher level degrees that are disciplined in science and in medicine, it's a tough place to be, super rewarding. And I would say, again, I would just underscore, don't stop your learning when you walk across and get your, you know, you get that final degree and you start working. Now's the time to start embracing new areas maybe that you haven't had time to pursue before, because you already have the wherewithal and the intelligence to really understand these things. And by doing it and aligning with the right people, there's no telling how far you can go in your future and your life.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Thanks again, Mr. Neil, for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the podcast series, The New Student Pharmacist, where we discuss chemistry and pharmacy, as well as leaders in pharmacy careers, community, and chemistry and pharmacy research. We encourage you to support the work we are doing and follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by subscribing for free. We are so glad that you were able to tune in today. Note, the views on the podcast represent those of my guest, and I take care and all the best.